Welcome to The World Shapers, conversations with authors about their latest books. I'm your host, Edward Willett, and this episode's guest, Charles Brakefield and Rox Berkey, Brakefield and Berkey, talking about their latest book, Enigma Tracer. Welcome to The World Shapers, the podcast where I talk to authors about their books. My name is Edward Willett, as you probably know from the opening credits, and I am the host of this podcast. I am the author of 20 novels thereabouts myself and a lot of nonfiction. My latest book from a big publisher is The Tangled Stars, which came out from Daw Books in 2022, late 2022. It's a humorous outer space far future adventure featuring an AI uplifted talking cat who becomes a starship captain. It's out in ebook and audiobook, and I highly recommend that you go and read it or listen to it. My latest book is actually a new edition of my debut novel, Soulworm, which was a young adult fantasy novel set in my hometown of Weyburn, Saskatchewan, where I lived in the 1980s. And the book is set in the 1980s, so it has very much a Stranger Things vibe. And that came out through my own Shadowpaw Press. Besides writing, I am a publisher, and Shadowpaw Press is my publishing company. It's becoming rather overactive, one might say, this year. I'm trying to publish so many books. I've already published three, and it's only March, so I did want to mention the three that I have published. First one is this one, because it ties very much into the podcast, Shapers of Worlds, Volume 4. It's a collection of science fiction and fantasy short stories written by authors who were guests on this podcast during its fourth year. So there's major bestsellers in there, like Sherry Lynn Kenyon, Michael Brent Collings is in there, David Boop. There's just a long list of great authors, wonderful stories, and I highly recommend it. And it's illustrated, too, by Wendy Nordell, a Calgary artist. Then the other ones that have come out are two novels. This is The Good Soldier by Nir Yaniv. It is, Levi Tedhar likes to call it MASH in Outer Space. I sometimes say Catch-22 meets Starship Troopers. Either way, it's a humorous science fiction satire, military science fiction satire. Very, very funny. Highly recommend that one, too. And then the other one that came out recently is The Headmasters Here by Mark Morton. He's a Canadian author, and this is young adult dystopian science fiction set in Ontario after something went wrong at a research facility, and alien creatures have come through, and they're parasites that attach themselves to people. So we're about three generations in when this book starts, and it's what flows from that. So all great books, and I highly recommend you looking them up. And again, that's through Shadowpaw Press, which you can find at shadowpawpress.com. Although the books are available everywhere, I have distribution. Any bookstore can order them in, and many bookstores will be carrying them. Some anyway, if you ask, you'll definitely get them. So that's Shadowpaw Press, something to check out. And that's kind of my opening statement here. So let's get on to this episode's guests. Now, let me get my reading glasses, because I can't do a thing without reading glasses. This is unusual because I have two guests this time, not just one. They are a writing team. They are Brakefield and Berkey. So Charles Brakefield is a technology expert in security, networking, voice, and anything digital. He enjoys writing, studying World War II history, travel, and cultural exchanges, and is a fan of wine tastings. Should have talked about that, because we're vinophiles, that's what they are. Yeah, not winos, my wife and I. a fan of wine tastings, winemaking, Harley riding, cooking extravaganzas, and woodworking. And then Rox Berkey is a technology professional who excels at optimizing technology and business investments. She works with customers all over the world, focusing on optimized customer experiences. Rox writes white papers and documentation, but has found she has a marked preference for writing fiction. They've written quite a lot of it, and we'll be talking about their Enigma series and the newest book, Enigma Tracer, which starts a new series, Enigma Airs, and also about some of their other writing activities. So that's Brakefield and Berkey. And let's meet them now. So, Charles and Rox, welcome to The World Shapers.
Thank you, Edward. We're so honored to be here. What a treat meeting you. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Now, you're in Texas, right?
Exactly.
Yes, sir.
So as I often start these things by looking for connections, and I do have a connection to Texas. That's where I lived before we moved up here to Canada when I was 8 years old. We lived up in the Panhandle in a little town called Tulia, about 50 miles north of south of Amarillo. And before that, we were in Lubbock. So I do have Texas roots in a way.
Oh, you still have the twang. That's pretty good.
I can still do it. I got teased for it when I first moved up here. The kids would say, "So draw, partner," because they thought I sounded like a cowboy. So, and I would explain, you know, Texas isn't really like that. Well, actually, it kind of was, but it wasn't where we were in cotton farming territory, not ranching territory. So, yeah. So anyway, yeah. Glad to have you on. And I will start the way I always start, which is to get you to tell me about yourselves and your writing journey. Where did you grow up? How did you get into writing? All that good stuff.
Well, it's kind of an interesting mashup of two careers. Rox and I ended up at the same high tech company, and 20 years ago, and they put us to work in outsourcing, you know, writing up white papers, telling people, okay, this is what's hosed up, and we got pretty jazzed by the people that said, "Hey, we like what you're writing." And one company came to us and said, "We'd like to publish some stuff." And we got a couple of tech manuals done. And so that was sort of the start of the Brakefield Berkey dynamic duo, as we're called from time to time.
And which one's Batman and which one is Robin? That's the question.
Clearly, I'm Robin, but so. I grew up in California and migrated to Texas, whereas Charles is a native Texan. So, you know, he has that claim to fame, the original cowboy. He'll yodel for you later, or Yahoo or whatever. But we did end up at the same companies, and we did get on to doing workshops for people, speaking to groups, selling technology, teaching, all of these different things. And that the companies really, really did like it. And so we were afforded some travel to different places. And so we incorporated and still do incorporate travel that we have done either through our work or with our individual families into the stories. And, you know, by far my favorite is travel. I know you're in Canada. My favorite place in Canada is Banff.
The Banff Center has a self-directed writing residency that I did once. Most productive week I ever had. I wrote 50,000 words on my work in progress at the time while I was at the Banff Center. And, you know, I'm sitting there in the Banff. Well, okay, the Banff Springs is an expensive place to write because, you know, a very expensive pint of beer, but you're looking over wonderful scenery while you're doing it. Yeah, so I got 50,000 words done on a 150,000 word novel in that 1 week. So I love Banff. Not just for that, but that's one reason. It's about 10 hours from here, due west, more or less. So,
From here, taking a short plane, it was like, you know, forever. It was a very, very long trip.
So that's one thing, you know, writing tech stuff. And, you know, that's another connection. My first published book was using Microsoft Publisher for Windows 95. I wrote computer books to start with. My first books were...
You poor thing.
Yeah, my second
Windows
book.
Windows 95.
My second book was using Microsoft Publisher for Windows 97. So it was kind of a series. So how did you go from that kind of writing, though, to writing fiction? Did you write fiction individually or together as you were moving up through the ranks? Or how did the fiction writing come about?
You know, when I was in high school, I was one of these people who wrote poetry. You know, I thought poetry was going to be it. Clearly it. Not something I've brought forward, but that and riding horses were the teenage dream at the time. But not anything really from a fictional perspective until after we did the second technical book. And it really didn't, I mean, technology books, the day you finish them these days, they're old, you know, they're just, they're old. And so Charles didn't want to do any more of them because they take a long time, a lot of investment in effort and blood, sweat, and words. And so he said, "No, I'm not going to write anymore." So what happened next?
Well, she does what she always does. She goes, "Okay, let me noodle on this." So in a couple of weeks or maybe a month or two, she comes in and goes, okay, here's the first 10 chapters of our technical fiction stuff. And I went, excuse me, what are we talking about here? And she goes, you know, this is good. We bake in the technical facts. We use fictional characters or we use the people we've worked with. I mean, we've got, you know, gobs of people we know and several we don't like. And we can use them in several different roles. And I said, well, I don't know. I said, and she saved the clincher to the point where she said, and we can kill people, not go to jail in it. I said, well, gosh, I've got some candidates pretty quick on top of the list. And what are we waiting for? Let's go. So
were you both readers of fiction? I mean, it's kind of hard to jump into fiction without having some familiarity with fiction.
Oh, yeah. All the way back to, since my dad was in the Air Force, we got to move every 2 years, whether I wanted to or not. Mm-hmm. So I was born in Austin. We spent time in several different countries. And the last 3 years before we moved back to the States, we were in a place in Germany that had no TV. So what do? You read like voraciously. And so with fiction, comic books, all kinds of neat stuff, listening to radio dramas, those are all things that kind of have a good imprint in the back of my mind for, how to say a story unfold.
And I've loved reading from very young. I mean, the Hardy Boys was my favorite series. I just enjoyed the Hardy Boys and, even had fun with Little Women and the classics. Charles Dickens was another big favorite. I just thought he was wonderful with his vivid descriptions and rich characters.
It was interesting not having TV because when we moved up here from Texas, I was 8 years old. We had a TV, but it broke on the trip. And then we didn't have one for a couple of years after that. So, and that was my prime becoming a voracious reader time period. So I think it actually had a beneficial influence on my reading and writing, although my brothers were huge readers as well. So it did kind of run in the family. That's why I got into science fiction, because my brothers read science fiction. So it was lying around the house.
Yeah.
So let's talk then about you write a lot of stuff, but we are specifically going to be talking about the book Enigma Tracer. But that all comes out of a whole series of Enigma books. So tell me about them and how they, you've sort of said how they came about, but what's the premise and how do you go about writing these things?
So when we started the Enigma series, which is a 12 book series, we decided we were going to, as Charles said, have a foundation of some technology threat woven into the story. So the first book, which was the one that he decided that killing people was fun if you didn't have to go to jail, that was focused on identity theft as an example. And so each of them really have a specific technology threat, whether it's ransomware or cryptocurrency or artificial intelligence. And we took that along all the way through a couple of generations of individuals. So we have our heroes and the family, because this is a family business that was formed on the tail end of World War II. And so even though the series kicks off in contemporary modern technology world, there are references to some of the things and influences that came from World War II to this family who started this information, information dynasty, I guess would be a good term. We capped the series at book 12 because who wants to have a book 13? Couldn't do it. I just mentally couldn't do it. So we started a new series called Enigma Heirs. And Enigma Tracer is actually the first book in that series.
And so this is the next the next generation, basically?
Yeah.
Right. So it's the in all life, I mean, what happens is that people evolve, they grow up, they say, I've had enough, and the next generation takes over. And the real struggle for people handing off the business, the technology, to the heirs is, did I give them enough to be able to be successful? Did I help them think learn how to be able to think through some of the problems, because I can't teach you everything you're going to run into. And so that's sort of the fun portion of it. It's like, okay, the two folks that we've got, one in charge of the R group and one in charge of the CATS team, the Cyber Assassin Technology Services Group. They're well trained, but they haven't seen everything. They haven't been through all the wars, and so a lot of times it's fun to being able to test, stress, and have them stretch to be able to fight a cyber criminal or the bad guy, like we did in Tracer, who's always one step ahead. And so that's where the drama comes in. That's where the I could see this coming. How do you get them out of this? Charles and Rocks. And so, that's the fun portion of it, because nobody's ever going to be teach you everything you need to know.
So, can you give a bit more of a synopsis for Enigma Tracer? What's the MacGuffin is what we would call it, science fiction terms. What's the problem in this one? The technical threat.
So it's interesting. So Gracie, who heads up the R group, and her twin brother, JJ, who heads up the CATS team, are trying to figure out what they're going to do just for their normal client base when Bailey, who went to school with Gracie, called and said, I got this problem. I have this man, which I believe is really doing something illegally with regards to plastics. And I need, Bailey's part of an ecological group. And so she says, I need to find the evidence so we can arrest him and put him in jail for not fulfilling the contracts that he has on the East Coast of the United States and find out exactly where all of these plastics are being dumped, because it's something's terribly wrong with it. So Gracie agrees to it, and they decide to stalk this man, Pliant, who's the head of Pliant Industries, and see what they can do. And to do that, they actually have to get on a cruise. So following him across the Caribbean to find out his destination will help them discover whether he's a good guy or whether he really is a dark character who is doing far more than just illegally dumping plastic.
Yeah, we categorize him as an ecological gangster. And that's the way that we get into the awkward pieces. And of course, you can't run on a ship. I mean, you could run around in a ship, but you can't escape. And so that makes it all the more confining. And you have to solve the problems in that space. You can't just, hey, let's call 911 and bring some people in. So it makes for a more interesting story.
So have you done cruises? Were you drawing on your own experience on cruise ships?
Yeah.
Annually, we actually do an author's cruise every year. And typically it goes to the Caribbean. This last year we went to Western Mexico, and it's a 1-week cruise with a whole group of authors specifically to not as vigorous as you were writing, but to learn more about the craft of being a published author and marketing and those aspects. So yeah, we've seen lots of different places and could pull on that knowledge into the story.
Yeah, cruise ships interest me because especially they're so massive these days, they're basically floating cities as big as the town I grew up in, all these people crammed into a ship, and they don't know each other until they get on the ship. So it's an interesting setting for sure. How do you go about go ahead.
I'm just going to say our favorite gag is that we get on a ship and we meet with 5,000 of our new closest friends.
So. Yes. And do a lot of eating, I understand. Eating is very big on cruise ships. So I'm interested in the process with this podcast. When it started, and for the first 5 years actually, was all about process, and we talked about the creative process. So let's talk a little bit about that. What kind of planning, outlining do you do before you launch into writing a book? There's two of you, which also interests me. How do you work that out? I've never collaborated with somebody on fiction.
So we actually track everything on spreadsheets. Imagine that. So all of our characters, all of our chapters, and we have conversations. What threat are we going to have for a book? Who are our main good guys? Who are our main bad guys? And we talk it out. So we do what I would call a rough out of what we want the story to do. And then we maybe highlight, what, 5-10 chapters, something like that.
Yeah.
And then we start going back and forth. So Charles take a chapter, I'll take a chapter, and we go back and forth and we email it to one another, because when you know, when you're in different places, you've got to do everything electronically. And hey, we're technologists, we can handle the digital transformation of stuff.
Yeah. But that's the way it works. It's what we call digital badminton, back and forth, literary badminton, if you want the technical term. That's what we're trying to get patented at this point. So, but it works rather well. Our best collaborative efforts, really, is when we go, when she's in town, and we get to go walking and just, just work through the story. Okay, how about this as an idea? Oh, that's really good. And that kind of conversation. And that really helps sculpt a nice plot that we fill in there.
Is the writing sequential? You're taking different chapters. Does somebody, the first person, write the first chapter, throw it to the second person who then writes the second chapter? Or are you writing chapters individually and then knitting them together based on your spreadsheet and planning?
We actually write them individually and knit them together and then review them. And typically I do the first pass at the smoothing, what I call the smoothing, where we blend it together, make sure the voices are appropriate for the characters. Because, quite honestly, everybody views conversations and voices very differently. So we try and make sure that it feels like a single voice, even though there are certainly two different people that are writing different things. But we've had very good luck in that Charles will read something I wrote that a guy said, and he goes, there's no guy on the planet that's going to talk like that. They're going to talk like this. So for us, it works very well as we go between different characters.
Now, how long are these books typically?
Oh, they can go anywhere from the novella size, which is like 60,000 words, all the way up to 100,000.
So substantial. And are you fast writers then in this process? How long does it take you to do a book together?
It's about, I guess we try to do 2 books a year. We've got the 2 different genres that we're working on almost simultaneously.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that too. There is the Enigma series, but you write other stuff. So tell me about some of the other stuff that you write.
So the other stuff, to use a technical term.
Yes. I like to keep things technical.
us too. It's a cozy mystery series. We got tangled up with 12 other authors that are called the Underground Authors. And their main emphasis was all about writing mysteries, cozy mysteries. And we postulated, actually, we built off of a task where somebody sent out this picture and just said, write me a story about this and I'll publish it. And that's what happened. And we had so much fun writing. Everybody wrote a different story, and it's all about the same picture, everybody saw something different. One of them, after we got finished, one of the authors said, this is such a good idea. Why don't we go ahead and do like some of the other authors are doing? And we write about a fictional story, write fictional stories in our particular genre on a city that we have invented in Central Texas called Magnolia Bluff. And it's the Crime Chronicles, and everybody has a month that they basically put together. It takes them a whole year or however long it takes, but we each pick a month and say, okay, we're gonna, for us, we're gonna do August again this year for the third installment in the Enigma series, in the Crime Chronicle series, and that's what we're working on simultaneously. So we get to share characters back and forth. Yeah, of course, it's considered bad manners to whack somebody's character, so you have to ask permission before you do that. But it's fun. It's a fun exercise to be able to step out from the thriller series and work in the cozy mysteries.
That's what we'd call, in science fiction, we'd call that a shared world series, because there's a few famous ones in science fiction fantasy. Thieves' World is the one that comes to mind, that went on for a very long time with characters floating around in different people's stories and different stories being told. It sounds like Magnolia Bluffs. What's the name of the town? Is that Magnolia
Bluff? Magnolia Bluff, Texas. It's in the Texas Hill Country. It's right on the edge of the Burnett Reservoir. So there's a lot of real things. But it's small town Texas. Now, you grew up in small town Texas. So there's there's a lot of standing things that go on in small town Texas. Things like
gossip
is probably the number one thing. And in Magnolia Bluff, the number two thing is people are just dying to get in. So the graveyard's always busy.
I was going to say, usually with sounds like with that kind of setup, Magnolia Bluffs would in the real world be like the murder capital of the state. Sort of like Cabot Cove in The Murder, She Wrote. All these murders in this little tiny town. And it was all because Jessica Fletcher was there. So I would kick her out if I were them. But anyway.
So, but they couldn't do it.
Once you have the story written, what's the polishing and publishing process for the Enigma books?
Well, a lot of that is goes to our primary editor, commas, you know, word choices, you know, just all the dumb stuff that you can't see when you've written it, rewritten it, and he's like, I don't see that. You're missing these words. That kind of editing polish. Then it goes to our beta readers and genre editors that say, okay, this makes sense, or you missed a step. And so that's that second, third polishing effort. And then one more hard read by each of us when we're finished with all of the surgery, be able to put it into a format. And then we get into the argument about what's the cover going to look like. And that's I would say that was a spirited discussion to classify it that way.
Go ahead.
No, so we know that we've done something well when the first line editor, which is also Charles's wife, Sandy, when she comes in and asks him, who wrote this scene? And he just nods and goes, yes. We know we did something right if she can't pick it out. So.
You mentioned beta readers. Where did you find them? And who are they?
We collect them from all over, from writing groups that we've been a part of, from other author groups that we've just been around. We try to stay away. We started with family members and good friends, but the success rate there is zero because all they want to do is make you happy.
Yeah.
So
everything's wonderful as far as they're concerned.
Yeah. That's what was the thing that the one key to being a writer is to quit writing is if your mother is looking over your shoulder. And if you're actually sharing your work with a family member, it's kind of like they're always looking over your shoulder. There is that as right. Well. You may want to make them happy as well and don't want to put something in that would shock them or startle them, depending on your relationship with your family members, I guess. My dad was a preacher, so there was that. So Enigma Tracer came out in... I seem to be frozen there for a minute, but I'm actually not. Enigma Tracer came out last year, right?
It came out in this year.
No,
this year.
Last year.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
20.
We did flip years. Sorry, I'm still sitting in 20. Yes, it came out in 23.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's the audiobook version recently won an award. So tell me about the audiobooks. Have you done all of them in audiobook? And where did you find the narrator? Is it the same narrator?
So there is a voice of the series, Derek Scholes, and he has done all of the Enigma series books, whether it's Heirs or the first series, except for book number one, which another narrator did. But he is the voice of the series. He's phenomenal. If we ever get the good luck of getting somebody who wants to put this in film, we're going to beg that Derek gets to be Ichabod. I mean, he just knows how to do Ichabod perfectly. And Ichabod is a supercomputer.
AI enhanced supercomputer who's been given ethics schooling. And right now he's still trying to master humor. So he's one of our favorite characters.
These books really are science fiction. I don't know if you think of them that way. They're thrillers, but they do certainly tip over into the science fiction side with characters like Ichabod.
Well, you know, you say that, and I hear you, but it's all technology that's real. So science fiction tends to be unreal. But computers...
It's near future science fiction, let's say that. You're extrapolating from technology to something that's very plausible and could happen very soon.
And minutes were in months.
That's an old argument about the definition of science fiction. But anyway, so that one came out last year. So how many books are you planning in the Enigma Heirs series? Is it going to be another 12?
No, it's a trilogy. It's three. And so book number two, Enigma Forced, is actually right now with the layout and graphics artist person to get the format done. It's gone through all of its, you know, steps and gets and fixes, and all the band-aids have been removed, and now all we need is it to be formatted in a nice way. And so it's there. And that's one of the covers that we're just struggling over. We're really having a hard time with the cover.
There's certainly a consistent look to the covers. How was that decided on initially? Through a lot of argument?
These are second covers for almost all of the books, at least the older one. The first ones really looked science fiction-y, to be honest with you. And then we were not getting the audience that we wanted to get. So we ended up revising them. And then we ended up with this graphic designer, Rebecca Finkel, who helped get the branding on the cover, helped get that solidified for us. But you don't think about that when all you want to do is write. You know, typically you just want to, I want to write, I want to put a story together. The rest of it will just take care of itself. Well, that's not true. I buy books by their covers. So they had to get redone, which is very painful.
Yeah, but it made for a better product. And it's much easier for people to pick it up and say, I'm interested in this. Tell me more about it. And when we're at the trade shows and face-to-face, those book covers, we've actually had people storming by, determined to walk past, saw the cover of the first one and said, and spun into the booth, I've seen this twice. I've gone by here. I got to have this. Talk to me about this particular book. So, those proof points really make a difference when you're struggling. Should I do this or should? Yeah, if they're not good enough to pick have people take them, they're not good enough.
So when does the second one come out?
Hopefully within 4 weeks, but you know it just depends. If we can't get this cover down, it's not coming out until the cover's done.
Yeah, you can't very well put it out naked, so.
Exactly.
So you must be working on book three on the actual writing side of things.
So we're working on the Magnolia Bluff Crime Chronicle book. And that one is called
Ransom.
Yeah. The Ransom Enigma. Right. The Ransom Enigma. So that I get confused with some of the terming and the names. It's like, one is scheduled for August.
You're using Enigma in those titles as well?
Yeah.
But in the other position, we were trying to, because the hero that we use in Magnolia Bluff is actually JJ, the head of the Cats team. Oh. And he needs to have a home away from home or a summer vacation place. And so Magnolia Bluff was the target initially. And he helps out the townspeople with his techno stuff.
So a little crossover going on there.
Yeah.
Then when will you be working on the third book? You must have it all planned out since it's a trilogy. You know what happens in the third book in the trilogy?
Yeah, we've got the first five chapters already crafted because we have the first four. At the end of the Enigma Forest. Sort of a teaser for the next one coming along. So yeah, we've got a pretty good idea of what we want to do with that one. It's kind of part of the time being while we get finished with the Ransom Enigma.
And if people want to keep up with you online and everything that you're writing and all the books you're writing, what's the best way for them to follow along with you?
I think one of the best ways is to visit our website.
It's a good one.
Which is enigmaseries.com. Thank you. Appreciate that. EnigmaSeries.com. We try to have samples of all the stories in there. There's Audible samples. There's also some terrific book trailers. They can also follow us on YouTube. So one of the things that we have done with YouTube for Enigma Series is we actually take snippets of the audibles and put them out there so they can listen to more than just the intro that you would get if you go to a website, and they can kind of get a little background as to why that particular segment was important to the story. So we hope that's a draw and fun for people.
Yeah. And then if you get out to our website at enigmaseries.com, you can sign up for our newsletter. And we send out neat stuff and dialogues and podcasts like this one, links to it in our email, so that you can always keep track of where we are, what we're doing, and not miss any of the fun activities that we're involved with.
And we have a calendar. So if we are out of town and people are wanting to see us at a book signing or one of the various fairs we do, now that it's eking into spring and summertime, the calendar can help do that.
Yeah, our snow is finally melting, but there's more in the forecast. So we'll get rid of it for good sometime in April. It'll be gone.
if you could send it down to the panhandle in Texas, where the fire is still raging, they'd be grateful for it.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, and that is, of course, my old stomping grounds up there, too. So yeah. I've been very aware of that. Well, I want to thank you both for being on the World Shapers. I enjoyed the conversation. I hope you did as well.
We did.
Absolutely wonderful, Edward. Thank you.
And best of luck with the series and Magnolia. I keep wanting to call it something else. It's Magnolia Bluffs. Well, yeah. I want to call it Magnolia Falls, which makes no sense at all. But anyway.
Well, several people have met their demise by falling. So I get it.
I guess you could fall off the Magnolia Bluffs. So that would be a tie in there.
Yeah.
Anyway, best of luck with all that. And thanks for being on.
Thank you. Ed.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And thanks again to Charles and Rox, Brakefield and Berkey, for that fascinating discussion. I'm always curious about the collaborative process when writing teams get together, because I've never actually collaborated with anybody quite like that. So it's always interesting to me, and I hope it was interesting to you as well, and also to hear more about their series. That's it for this episode of The World Shapers. Just a couple of things to tell you about as we wrap up here. First of all, that The World Shapers is online at theworldshapers.com. You can also find it, of course, here on my YouTube channel. And you'll find it on Facebook at The World Shapers. You'll find it on X/Twitter at The World Shapers. You can find me at edwardwillett.com. You can find me on X/Twitter at ewillett. You can find me on Facebook at edward.willett, and you can find me on Instagram at Edward Willett Author. I just couldn't get all my handles straight. And of course, you can find me on YouTube, which is very likely where you are watching this, if you are watching it and not just listening to it, at my YouTube channel, Edward Willett, just at Edward Willett. And one of the things you'll also find on my YouTube channel are my walking in Regina videos. I walk around my hometown here of Regina, Saskatchewan on a regular basis with my camera out, live streaming my walks. So if that sort of thing interests you, please check that out. You'll also find quite a bit of music and other things on my YouTube channel. So I hope if you are just listening to this, that you will visit the YouTube channel and maybe subscribe. And if you are watching this video, please subscribe if you haven't, so you never miss any more videos that I might put up. And Shadowpaw Press, my publishing company that I mentioned, is at shadowpawpress.com. It's also on Instagram at Shadowpaw Press, on Facebook at Shadowpaw Press, and on X at Shadowpaw Press, because that one, I got all the handles the same. That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope that you will continue to come back as I continue to talk to authors about their latest books. That's it for now. Thanks for joining me.